We're spread out in 19 buildings in the county.
You don't have enough money to cover a bid you get.
Just in Salt Lake County.
You can't dig earth or
two at Heber Wells. We also got 80 people over in Murray. We got 22 people in the building.
So you fill out the application for the
that's a crappy
I'm going to introduce all
I don't think the governor wants that's the other reason.
That added to the, that just people with the plane that was already
I'll have to email you the day before and remind you to
well, it was easy to come there. I just jumped on the
thing walked right up there.
My, you know, that little segment got off the rest of the
You got all kinds of credit.
Was back up, so I wouldn't
okay.
Come that way. You know,
I found one or two.
That coming south from Lake. So 15 was all back up.
All kinds of logistics on the
same
but it's here to see if they get
I,
play, right?
Yeah. I want him to crack this one on four.
Okay. If everyone can find a seat, we'll get started with our staff briefing.
Well done.
Good morning, board. Yesterday, if you'd have come up here for the funding meeting, or maybe some of you did get to travel on I-15 yesterday. That was a fortuitous incident, or unfortuitous. But thank you for making it today. This is October 6th, in case you haven't looked at your calendar yet. And this is the first funding meeting of the first trimester of FY 2017. The next CIB meeting is scheduled for Thursday, November 3rd at the Red Cliffs Lodge in Moab. I believe I have all your information. If you're going to stay extra days or bring extra people, please let us know. On page 1-1-1, there are 24 projects shown on the priority list today, and one new project for discussion, which has yet to be discussed, and it's under the new projects, and then one's coming in on the pending list, from the pending list. And those items will be up for board discussion in this meeting. The fund summary on 1-1-2 has a supplemental page in your red folder. That page shows the mineral lease funds that have been allocated to the transportation fund. And Chairman Heaton will discuss what those numbers mean, but that's what you didn't receive into your new monies. There is a throughput balance also that's not indicated anywhere that is going into the throughput set aside per the legislation, and that amount is $4,333,000 so far. They have a year to build that up. So that's what's in there, and it's not reflected anywhere on your funding page, but I thought that would be a piece of information you might be interested in. In the red folder in today's meeting, I discussed the revised funding page. There's also on blue, some information concerning the Huntington project. They have two projects up for funding today. This one is the second of the two, and the applicant would like some time, or would like the board to consider their authorization. What had happened is that the funding was authorized contingent on the USDA funding. That funding is slow to come, not denied, but hasn't come in yet. They've done some revisions that you will see on the blue sheet, and they would still like to receive what the board has authorized going forward. They did make some cutbacks to accommodate that $50,000 that was going to come from USDA that is still pending. Also, there's a little handout flyer on planning and studies. That's just information. Also, the new applications for the next trimester are on green. That is as of the close of the deadline for applications for the second trimester of fiscal year 2017. That's a total amount of $10,044,000 in requests, grant and loan. Also in your red folder, is the required reporting from the RPP group. We require that at each funding meeting for them to submit those reports of what good things are happening in the AOGs per the RPP program. Please sign in. If you haven't signed in, everybody, there's a sign-in sheet in the back. Keith will remind you later in the middle of the meeting. The items that are probably up for discussion, and as you know, funding meetings just proceed through. I am aware of the Huntington City, which is number 5. I am aware of some discussion that will come from number 24, which is Leverkin. It's also, but it was submitted in your packet, their revised request. Number 11 is Green River City. They've asked to be put on the pending list, so that is not one that will be funded today. And I believe that's all that will be discussed. And I will turn the time over to Chairman Heaton.
Thank you, Ms. Powers. That was a brief briefing. I guess that's how briefings should be. Good morning, all. We appreciate your effort to be here today. It's a crisp but beautiful morning, so I guess that's better than a ugly morning for traveling across the state. So we appreciate your effort to be here today. We hope it's worth your while. Before we, I guess the first order of business would be some introductions. Gail, we'll start with you and work around the table.
Okay. Gail Gardner with Housing and Community Development Division.
Wade Fairway, Utah Attorney General's Office.
Jonathan Hardy, Housing and Community Development Division.
Good morning, Mike McKee with Huona County.
I'm Bruce Adams, San Juan County Commissioner, representing Southeastern Utah AOG.
Jay Potter, Carbon County Commissioner.
Good morning, Keith Heaton with the Housing and Community Development Division.
Candace Powers, Housing and Community Development, Permanent Community Impact Board Fund Manager.
Commissioner Tudor Ogden, Sevier County, representing the 6th County AOG.
Ron Winterton, Duchesne County Commissioner, representing the Unabasin AOG.
Good morning. Nagi Zinadi, representing UDOT Commission.
Jim Mattson, Kane County Commission, representing the 5 County Association of Governments.
Steve Farrell, representing the Board of Water Resources.
Greg Galecki, representing the Water Quality Board.
And Dave, would you like to introduce yourself?
David Damshin, State Treasurer.
Thank you. We have some new faces and some retiring faces that I'd like to recognize. First off, Chris Reed. Chris, if you can raise your hand, you all recognize Chris. She's been here for several years acting as the Secretary to the Board. Chris will be moving on to some new and exciting responsibilities, new challenges and opportunities, so we're pleased for her. And she is being replaced, if there is such a thing as replacing someone, by Jennifer Domenici. Jennifer, which is there, Jennifer next to Chris. Jennifer will be acting as Secretary to the Board for the foreseeable future, so we're very excited to have her. She comes highly recommended, and I promise that you'll enjoy working with her. She brings a lot of energy, and we could all use a little bit more of that, I think. Also, Nathan Hall, I'd like to embarrass him, if he could raise his hand. Nathan has been serving as an advisor to the board for several years, and he has accepted a new position, I understand, as a district manager in Vernal, district engineer. And so he'll be leaving, and I understand Michael Grange will be sitting in for the foreseeable future. Is that?
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Could I just make a quick comment? We hate to leave him, but you can't blame him from wanting to come to Vernal.
Can't blame him with that, can you? Especially as winter comes around, what a fine place to be.
it's nice. It's a little better than San Juan, but it's good.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to touch that one, but
we'll see anyway. How well Mike can sing.
Yes. Well, it's all right. It's over.
Anyway, we appreciate Chris and Nathan for their tremendous service to this board and its objectives, and we wish them well in their new activities. Also, want the board to be aware that as you look at the green sheet that was in the red folder, boy, sounds like Christmas already, we have a fairly light agenda for the next trimester. Light agendas always turn out to be a lot of work, so don't be fooled. But because of the volume of applications, it's proposed that we, eliminate the January meeting. So generally, I think that would have been January 8th. Is that?
Can I have a question, Keith? It was my understanding that the Spanish Valley project was supposed to come in either in November or December, and I don't see it on here.
Candace, can you give us an update on that? I know that there's been some discussions going on, but I don't know the specifics of them. Can you address that?
Yeah, we've had quite a few conversations, both with drinking water quality and Spanish Valley. They know that it is the intent. After the meeting on the 27th, which is the water quality meeting, that it will be placed on the board according to, or on the agenda, according to how DEQ has funded it. We're hopeful that it will remain 50-50 split, but it will be on one of these agendas.
Okay. So are you talking the water project or the sewer?
Sewer.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, sewer. Sewer is on the water quality board's meeting on the 27th of October.
So it, depending on what happens there, it will be on.
It will get on here as number 9 on one of those meetings.
Just didn't want the agenda to be too light.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. We appreciate that.
Doing your part.
Next item of business, approval of minutes from September 8th. The Chair will entertain a motion or any corrections at this time.
Nagy and I have looked, and there are some corrections, and we think we just give them to Chris and save the time of some of it's grammar, some of it's just... But with that, I would make a motion that we approve the minutes with those corrections.
There a second?
I would like to second that with the extent of my love and appreciation for Chris and all the wonderful job she's done. Without those minutes, we will not know, honestly. First of all, we don't know what we ate for breakfast, yet alone remember what we did last month. So thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Zanotti. That's highly appropriate. So a motion by Commissioner Winterton, a second by Mr. Zanotti, with the corrections as will be presented. Any other questions?
Thanks. That young lady has a question.
Jennifer.
Jennifer.
No, sorry, you said your name. I didn't.
Great. Thank you. If there's nothing else, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Well, sometimes that can be the hardest part of the meeting, so feel good about getting that out of the way. Next item that I'd like to address is the funding situation. If you'll look at your revised funding sheet, you'll see, as has been addressed at every meeting during this past trimester, we're about $2.2 million in the hole on our mineral lease balance. That's funding that we grant. But we do have a surplus in our bonus fund of about $8.6 million. We've discussed in previous meetings how we are going to transfer funding out because the legislature created the throughput infrastructure fund. Their transportation has been taking our mineral lease money as that comes in. And so what staff is proposing is that we transfer the amount of money that has been received at this point in the year that would come to $3,225,961, which would more than cover our deficit in the mineral lease fund, and that would keep us in line as if we were receiving the money that is going into that transportation fund. Commissioner McKee, you have a
comment? Just a question with that. With that recommendation, would it be your advice that we do that at the beginning of the meeting so it makes it?
That is what I'm proposing, yes, so that we know what we're dealing with financially. So at this point, the chair will entertain a motion to move that amount of money or any discussion or other suggestions. Commissioner Adams?
So if I understand it right, it's coming out of the infrastructure fund balance?
Yes.
And the infrastructure fund balance, do we designate money that's in there, whether it was mineral lease fund or bonus money?
It's all mineral lease funding.
It's all mineral lease money?
Yes.
So we're not gonna put any of that bonus money into the infrastructure?
No, that was not our intent.
Okay. And I just think it's a marvelous idea.
Thank you. We had a question over here.
I just had a sense. Do you have a sense of, so how does that leave? I don't have a firm understanding of the infrastructure fund balance at this point.
Okay. We had money in our infrastructure fund that we'd set aside from previous years, meetings, et cetera, et cetera. I believe it was last month the four county withdrew their application for the port project because the legislature had created a new fund for that. And so the $53 million that we had set aside for the port came back into the infrastructure fund balance because that's where it came from. So our current balance in the infrastructure fund is just north of $68 million. So that's the $53 million plus what we had in there before.
But isn't that 53 still has to be go to UDOT to a certain way to cover the...
UDOT is taking their money off the top of our mineral lease revenues. So
okay.
Rather than us seeing those monies, they're going
That's
to
right.
transportation.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted
right.
to be clear on that.
I appreciate the clarification. It's hard to keep straight, even in my own mind.
And Keith, in fact, isn't this $3,200,000, isn't that money?
That is the amount that they have taken so
that
far.
It's taken, and so it's right. just really kind of just moving the money, just keeping us whole.
Exactly.
Thank you.
That's the intent, as we discussed. Any further questions? Go
ahead. Can I just make one other thing, just because we watch the mineral lease money very close, and I'm sure a lot of you do, but... You know, there is a lag in that money coming in, but natural gas prices and oil prices last winter really dipped low, and we got down to $26, $27 a barrel. I think gas got down to, what, around $163, something like that. But, in, you know, we're between $45 and $50 now on the oil. Gas is hovering right around $3, and we're starting to see with that lag that the prices pick up. The other thing is... It appears that we're going to get sequestration funds again as well. So that will also help our balance as we move forward because they take out sequestration every month, and usually we get that in the next month or two when that should show up again. So
that would be very helpful.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, just back to Greg's question in regards to that balance. Just wanted to make sure that we all understood, too, that $53 million that has come back into there, that that'll be dispersed over the next two-year period of time because that's what was set up by the legislative
right.
process. So it's not that we can just swipe a bunch of money out of there, but that will cover those mineral revenues that should have flown in flowed into the fund, as Commissioner McKee talked about.
They're not exactly flying at this point, but they are flowing.
Right, but they are flowing.
Mr. Chairman, is that dollar amount, $53 million, capped, or if there's a ceiling on that? Can UDOT exceed that dollar amount?
No, my understanding is they cannot.
Okay.
26
statutorily set. So far, it's significantly less, I think, than what... the legislature had anticipated based on historic amounts, but that's okay. Not our concern. Treasurer Damshin?
Mr. Chair, when you initially mentioned this $3 million amount for transfer, I think you said it was an annual equivalent. So there was an estimate component, or is this the actual to-date cash flow?
Those are the actual amounts that have flown into the account so far.
Okay, thanks.
We have a motion on that.
We have not had a motion yet.
So I'd make a motion that we approve the funding transfer as recommended.
We have a motion by Commissioner Ogden to approve and a second by Councilman Farrell. Any further discussion on the motion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Yes, 3.225961. Thank you. As many of you, if not all of you, know, our funding meeting flows a little bit differently than our normal meetings. What we try to do in the interest of your time and heartburn is lump numbers of projects together, but at the same time balance that with giving applicants and the board an opportunity to discuss particular projects. So what I'll do as chairman is normally I'll lump several together. I'll essentially be doing it in fives. But as Candace said, there are several applicants that have expressed interest in presenting to the board, so we'll pause for those. So to start with, we have Upper Country Water Improvement District property improvements for Altamont. It was a grant for $125,000. Project number two was the town of Sigurd, a new fire brush truck grant and $87,000. The chair will entertain a motion to approve those two grants.
So moved.
Wow, that was quick. I saw Ron Winterton with the motion and Councilman Steve Farrell with the second. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor, aye.
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 Just go? Okay. There was some question about Salina, so we're going to handle that one individually. Salina City for a swimming pool renovation was a $650,000 loan, 30 years at 2.5%. The chair will entertain a motion or any questions on that project.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, I didn't catch the motion. Mr. Zanotti and Commissioner Mattson with the second. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Project number four is Huntington City Cemetery Improvements. Sorry, the volume just went up. Fencing and drainage around the cemetery. The request is a $60,000 grant. The chair will entertain a motion at this time.
So moved.
Thank you, Commissioner Adams. Is there a second?
Second.
Oh, boy, there's so many seconds. Was that Commissioner Potter? We'll give it to you. I guess you're closer to my ear. So, any questions on the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Huntington City, as Candace discussed, they wanted some time to talk about their RDA match. Mayor Gordon, would you like to come forward and address the changes with the project?
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I sent the corrections, you have a copy of what I'm proposing. USDA, as Candace said, they did not turn us down, but they are slow. And when we contacted them, the reply that we had was that they had a priority for first responders, and we were down the list a little bit. Because last time I was here, we talked about everything being, we would get the money if it went through the way that, you know, we proposed it. And it looked to me like it wasn't going to happen by this meeting. So we took, scaled the building down. As you know, last time we talked about the building being substantially expensive. So we talked about scaling it back at least to 50. So that if USDA does not come through with the funding, we would take the responsibility of the extra 50. Other than that, everything's the same.
Make a motion to approve the request.
Second.
Thank you. We have a motion by Commissioner Adams and a second by Commissioner McKee. Any discussion on the motion?
So it's still the same cost. I didn't have a chance to read it yet. So it's still the same cost on the restroom. It's just that you will cover the costs of from. Okay.
We're not asking the CIB for any more money. I just wanted to. I could have just gone ahead the way that it was, but I wanted to bring this to the attention of the board because I think it's appropriate to do that.
We appreciate
and
that.
And so that's all. I'm not asking for any more money. I'm just telling you that we're making some changes.
Okay.
The funding changes. Okay.
Nope. Any further questions on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
Mr. Galecki stands opposed. Motion carries. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Agenda item number 6, Grand County Municipal Building Authority Airport Terminal Building for the Canyonlands Field Airport. The total request is for $990,000 with a $490,000 20-year 2.5% loan and a $500,000 grant. Item number 7, Beaver City Airport Runway Improvements, $80,000 grant. Number 8, Grantsville City Municipal Building Authority New Justice Center, $2,700,000 loan. What were the terms on that, Candace?
30 years.
30 years at 2.5. Thank you. Santa Clara City, $351,000 loan amount, 20 years at 2.5%. Town of Loa, new fire truck, $315,000, $644,000 grant. The chair will entertain a motion on those five projects.
I so move.
Second.
I had Commissioner Mattson.
We're just racing.
You guys are racing. And who was the second? And Councilman Farrell. So Commissioner Mattson made the motion. Councilman Farrell seconded it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Item number 11, Green River City. They have yet to receive their EDA funding on that feasibility study for natural gas service, so they have asked to be placed on the pending list. So this project will be on the pending list until they are ready to move forward. Agenda item number 12 is the Town of Hatch Transportation Master Plan $5,000 grant. Agenda item 13, Garfield County New Public Works Facility.
Can we do that separately?
Sure. So chair will entertain a motion on the Town of Hatch Transportation Master Plan for $5,000.
So made.
Well, we'll give Councilman Farrell this motion and Winterton the second. Any questions on that motion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Carries unanimously.
That's okay.
Greg, would you like to invite Garfield to come forward, or did you just have some...
As far as how it's structured, I know we passed it, but I still in good conscience can't be in favor of that.
And the concern is that it's 100% grant?
You're right.
Which one? We're looking at Garfield County, number 13, new public works facility, $800,000 grant.
They're putting in cash with that, as I recall.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to reopen the whole thing. It's just that how it is set up. I still think, fundamentally, because of the amount of cash, it was going through the whole discussion that they were still able to take a loan, but they chose not to. And I don't think that's the best interest in the board. However, we passed it that way, which is fine. Just on principle, I don't want to vote for it in block at this time.
I appreciate that. Any other discussion on Garfield County?
Mr. Chairman, just for my purpose of clarification, can we revise at this stage after they've been passed last
yes.
meeting?
Yes, the board can change the terms as terms. They desire. Yeah.
Well, would you like to change it, any terms, Mr. McHale? Your motion, your proposal?
I'll make a motion. We approve it as is.
I second that.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Adams to approve as is, and a second by Councilman Farrell. Is there a substitute motion or any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Let the record reflect that Greg Galecki was opposed. The motion carries. Item number 14 on your agenda, the Iron County Municipal Building Authority Courthouse Building Remodel. Total amount $1,587,583 with a $794,000 20-year, 2.5% loan, and a $793,583 grant. Item number 15 is the Town of Fayette Road Improvements, Phase 2, a $326,000 grant. Number 16, Sanpete County Municipal Building Authority, $120,000 grant. Item number 17, Hilldale City Flood Control Project. Total amount, $762,000 with a $336,000 20-year, 2.5% loan, and a $336,000 grant. Item number 18. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I transposed my numbers.
Yes.
Thank you for that clarification. Let the record reflect. The chairman was wrong.
Thought he was right.
With that correction, item number 18, Ashley Valley Water and Sewer Improvement District, Fire Hydrant and Fire Flow Upgrades, $1,334,000 total request with a $667,000 30-year 2.5% loan and a $667 grant. Boy, thank you, $667,000. It's a good thing I got you, Candace.
Candace is on her game here.
I know. I better stop and catch my breath and call for a motion on those projects.
Don't move.
Don't move.
I'm gonna give the motion to Commissioner Ogden and okay. The second to Commissioner Mattson.
Please look over here next to the round.
Your turn now.
Put my head on a swivel. Any questions on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
That group over there is pretty ready this morning. They're just,
yeah, it's a lively group over there.
They are.
They're closer to the coffee. Project 19 on your agenda, Ballard Water and Sewer Improvement District, new culinary water tank. Total request $2,465,000 with $600,000 30-year 2.5% loan and a $1,865,000 grant. Project number 20, San Juan Spanish Valley Special Service District Culinary Water System Improvements. Total request $2,465,000 with a $638,000 30-year 2.5% loan and a $1,912,000 grant. Agenda item 21, not agenda 21, item 21. Oak City Culinary Water System Improvements, $525,000 loan. Let me check the terms on that one real quick.
30-year, 2.5.
My numbering's different on those. So, yeah, that's a 30-year, 2.5% loan. Parowan City Implementation Study, $13,500 grant. Tocqueville City General Plan and Transportation Master Plan, $44,500 grant. The chair will entertain a motion.
Move to approve.
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner McKee. Thank you, Commissioner Adams. Commissioner McKee with the motion, Commissioner Adams with the second. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. This is the wild, wild west, isn't it? Click on the draw. Laverkin City, would we like to invite them forward? So we'll invite them at this time.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Originally, when we come up here, the first time we asked for a loan grant, about a 50-50 loan grant, $241,000 grant, $242,000 loan, 2.5% for 20 years. The city would be contributing $17,000, and that put our payment at roughly $15,500 on an annual payment. At the August meeting, you approved a $373,000 loan with a $100,000 grant, 2.5% for 20 years. That put our payment, our yearly payment, the city still contributing the $17,000, put our payment a little over $25,000 or just under $25,000. I can't remember exactly. What we'd like to propose to you is consider that we make some changes to our what we originally asked for. We'd like to, you to consider a $165,000 grant and a $282,000 loan at 2.5% for 20 years, which the city would contribute $17,000 again, with our yearly payment being approximately $18,000, a little over $18,000. Based on the discussion we had in August, there were some concerns with the board regarding sidewalks. I've since contacted UDOT for the Safe Routes to School. We're in the process of applying for a Safe Routes to School grant to take care of the sidewalk portion of that. So we took out $11,000 that we were planning on using for sidewalks. There were also some concerns for our engineering. We have a short staff, so we had engineers working a little bit with that in that project, and we've since decided we could try and handle that in-house, so we took out another $25,000 of engineering for construction and administration. So basically we reduced the grant amount by $76,000 that we are requesting and increased the loan by $40,000, and that's what we would like to propose to you as a possible alternative option. It's mostly a budgeting thing for us, trying to, and the $18,000 puts us right at the max of what we currently have budgeted to be able to make the repayment.
Questions from the board?
I'd like to comment that I like how, you know, the board kind of made some tough decisions and you went back and made some more, and then, you know, and so I think that's how the process should go. So I move to approve.
Second on the motion.
We have a motion by Greg Galecki, a second by Nagy Zanotti. Any question from Commissioner Adams?
The sheet we got doesn't show them putting in any applicant cash, so they are.
That was an oversight. Their cash match remains the same at $17,000. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. Yes, excellent. Further questions on the motion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Did you state your name for the record?
I didn't.
Would you please?
Kyle Gubler. I'm the city administrator.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have a new secretary. She doesn't recognize all the faces yet. We have a new project on our agenda today, although it's one that we've been discussing for quite some time. So we'd like to invite representatives from the Six County Infrastructure Coalition to come forward or move backwards, depending on who's representing. While Mr. Oakland is coming forward, I'd just like to comment on this project. The Infrastructure Coalition staff, and including their engineering and the HCD staff, the CIB staff, have been working very hard to get this project where it is at. This is a very large project, a very important project, and I'll let them speak to that. But I just want the board to know that we've worked really hard to get it down to this amount at this time, and let the Infrastructure Coalition know that, you know, we've agreed that we would phase this, and the staff agreed, so it's up to the board, of course, to make the decision. But rather than coming in for $1.3, $1.4 million, the infrastructure has agreed to come in for the $600,000 grant, which they do have the match for. And, you know, as we discussed last time, in the future, if they come in under special consideration, then we wouldn't have to have the match. But because they do have the match for this amount, there's no need for the special consideration. So, again, this is phase one. I commend the Infrastructure Coalition and their team for working with us to get it at this amount, and I'll turn the time to them to tell us about the project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ralph Okerlund, Executive Director of the Six County Infrastructure Coalition. I have with me today Brian Barton from Jones and Mill Engineering, who has been preparing the application, doing some work on the project. Mark Eccles, who has been a consultant to Duchesne County and Carbon County on this project as well, and our legal counsel, Eric Johnson. First, let me say the staff has been incredible as normal, but even more so on this project. We've been working on this, had numerous meetings for several months to try to bring something that we think works well for the board and can still work well for the coalition on this very important project. The project we can talk about in greater detail, but briefly, it would be to take a pipeline that would carry oil down out of the Uinta Basin, where, of course, the big supply is, down to Carbon County to a loadout facility so that it can then hit the rail and can be shipped to refineries on the Wasatch Front where most of the oil is going now, or really any place else in the country or in the world from that rail facility once it hits rail. So it's an extremely important project, a project that will certainly make that oil increase in value, and to the point where it will probably even offset entirely the black wax crude penalty that's been imposed on it by the refineries that are taking it now. It probably will totally offset that, which means a lot more revenue to not only the counties but also to the CIB board as the price goes up. That's paid for that product as it becomes more viable nationwide, the more money comes into the board, and of course, for private industry, it just makes it a lot more attractive to be able to extract that resource out there and to be able to ship it, make it worth more money and have a much greater market. The pipeline, we have already begun the studies, and the match that we're providing is money that has been spent and appropriated by Carbon County and Duchesne County, as well as Azure Engineering Company that has been working on this project with the counties to begin the process that is very important that we begin now. Some of the work that has already been done is time sensitive. We've talked about this, I think, with most of you before, but to be able to get up there in the high elevations at this point and look at spotted owl habitat and architectural, I mean, historical positions that may be in that upper part of the country in the higher elevations, that will later be covered by snow. Now that we've been able to get into the study a little bit more early with the money that's already been put into the project, it gives us the opportunity to be able to get some of those time-sensitive issues handled. The $600,000 that we're asking for then is a match for what has already been put into the project. We, with that money, are going to be able to do a number of things. One of the first things I think is very critical that we do is get into a very detailed economic analysis of what that does for, what the pipeline would do for everybody that's concerned out there for production and for pricing. I can turn the time over to, I would like to turn the time over for just a minute to Brian Barton from Jones and the Mill, who can talk about the scope of the project and give some detail. And then we can see maybe if that raises some questions. Mark Eccles here, who has been a consultant for the counties, has been, is just truly an expert in oil in the Uinta Basin. It's been a 35-year career for him where he has been working on lots of projects out there, and there's no doubt there's probably no greater expert than Mark Eccles on what's going on out there. So he'd be able to answer any of those kinds of questions. And then any questions on legalities we have Eric here for. Let me just briefly say also at the start, Duchesne and Carbon County began this work, and then they brought it to the coalition. When they see that this becomes a multi-county and even almost a statewide kind of a project. And so they see the coalition as being able to address those kinds of issues, where a single county has difficulty doing that. When you have a project that goes across county lines and affects what happens in the entire state with transportation and everything that goes on out there, it just becomes a little bit bigger project than a single county can do, and even in partnerships. So the coalition, they thought, would end up being a good way to move the project forward and a place for us to be able to move it forward. So if I can, I'll turn the time over to Brian for just a minute to talk about the scope.
Thank you. Again, Brian Barton with Jones and DeMille Engineering. As Chairman Heaton referenced earlier, this is a complex project, many issues in play. And so what we've tried to do is boil it right down to the critical path elements that need to move forward immediately as part of this phase one effort. And as was mentioned earlier, there's a waxy crude market study that focuses on transportation cost, moving it on the highways versus in a pipeline, industry trends, some good analysis that will give the CIB and the coalition a great amount of excellent information that will help everyone moving forward. There's a power supply study, obviously being able to provide electrical service to the upper and lower end of the pipeline is a big deal. So we need to take a look at that. And then beginning the process with the BLM, it's mostly federal land that we're going to be dealing with. So beginning the process, working with the BLM, building a plan of development that is solid. The rule of thumb is the better your plan of development, the shorter your environmental document needs to be. So doing a lot of that critical research up front is the focus of the effort here. I think that covers the general intent of this phase one.
Let me also just mention, we're also doing, as part of the study, and depending on how much money and time we have to get into it with this phase of the study, that transportation study that Brian mentioned will be part of what we're doing. There are 300 loaded oil trucks per day going down Heber City's Main Street. Mr. Farrell, I'm sure you've seen that. That's loaded. And those same 300 trucks are going back empty on Heber City's Main Street. Yeah. So, Mr. Donati, you're certainly aware of that as well. There are some real safety issues, of course, with that, with Highway 40, which is, in a lot of cases, there are not passing lanes, and so there's some dangerous situations there. There's some real safety issues that this pipeline will go a long ways towards answering a lot of those safety issues. There's also the congestion that we have in Salt Lake City when we get all of those trucks coming in and out of those refineries. So we have all of those issues, as well as a real environmental issue. All of those trucks, of course, are pouring out their exhaust. If we can get this oil into this pipeline, get it down to the rail, so you have one rail that will be able to carry the oil that's going in on those trucks, is certainly going to make a huge difference on the air quality that we see in the Wasatch Basin, in the Wasatch Front, as well as in the Uinta Basin. So those are two very important aspects that this project will go a long ways towards answering as well. It was very important. We're going to be able to take a good look at the numbers there and be able to come back with some good information. Our intent is to be a very good partner on this project with CIB to keep you in the loop and informed on what is going on with the project, what our study is showing, so that you're really up to speed. We appreciate your considering this as a partnership. With that, I think we'd be able to answer questions if there are some.
Questions from the board at this point?
Mr. Chairman.
Hi, Commissioner Ogden.
I have a question. On working with the BLM, have you considered, or are you able to do the EA instead of the EIS? I mean, that was one thing that, you know, was considered. That was going to cost a substantial amount of money or time in your project.
Yes, time and expense. the initial thoughts, based on the NEPA regulation, the discussions with the BLM, is that we're going to start at an EA level, evaluate it there, and then see how the NEPA process progresses. Obviously, if issues are identified that need to be addressed in a higher at a higher level, then it, there's a chance that it could push to an EIS, but right now we're starting with the assumption of an EA.
Is it on existing corridors and such? Is that why you think? Because it seems like the length of it,
yes,
doing an EA is
that's been the primary That's the primary goal, is to keep it within disturbed limits. There are lots of pipelines. Questar has a major facility through the corridor. So that's the goal, is to limit new disturbance, keep it within existing disturbance, and minimize impacts that way.
Mr. Zanotti, and then we'll go to you, Mr. Farrell.
Yes. My question is twofold, in-kind property and in-kind cash. Is that proportional on the counties or just equal partnership? How do you divide that contribution?
It has been just on the amount of money that they have been able to raise between the two. I don't know if we know for sure. Our commissioners might be able to tell us if there is some kind of a sharing on a benefit or a property analysis. But the project would benefit both of those counties tremendously, but the entire, all of us, all of the state, almost equally. So the money that has been donated, that has been put into the project by the counties, has just been an equal amount of $100,000 each, and it has been just the amount of money that they could scare up in their budgets to be able to put into the project at this time. So I don't know if there's any more science than that.
Okay.
On that amount, but that is the amounts that each of those counties have contributed.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mr. Farrell?
What percent of the oil coming out of the basin will utilize this pipeline?
I'll turn to Mark on that one.
Yeah, I'm Mark Eccles. I'm a consultant to the counties, and if I had expected Senator Oakland's generous introduction this morning, I'd have worn my irrigation boots instead of these loafers. But the Uinta Basin oil production peaked in at the end of 2014 at about 93,000 barrels a day, and it's been flat since about March at about 63,000 barrels a day. So we lost almost a third after the price collapse. And this pipeline would be designed to carry about 60,000 barrels a day. It will not eliminate 100% of the truck traffic, but it'll get it down to a manageable level. Does that answer your question?
Yes, about 50%.
Yeah.
Mr. Galecki, did you have a question?
Yeah. The long pipeline, and this is probably in my not knowing of the situation, but, you know, so often you see, is, you know, like the Keystone Pipeline and various other pipelines, that it's my understanding that it's, you know, the industry that is building those pipelines. Combination one, why isn't industry involved, and are they partners in this?
The answer is to the first question is that industry has not been involved for decades in trying to find a solution to the Uinta Basin crude oil transportation problem. The Uinta Basin has huge crude oil resources and reserves, and has always suffered for lack of an alternative to trucking the oil over two mountain ranges to Salt Lake City. And the cost of this project, you know, we've had a transportation study and we've had a railroad study trying to find alternatives to the trucking and to understand the trucking and the safety issues and the economic issues. Frankly, at this point, everybody seems to think that it costs about around $5 a barrel to truck a load of oil from the Uinta Basin to the Salt Lake refineries. But it costs a lot more than that, because that doesn't include any of the costs that the state pays for abnormally high maintenance on Highway 40, for a continuing project to widen Highway 40 so that we're not all stuck behind crude haulers trying to go up hills slowly. There are multiple costs that have been enumerated in these previous studies. And so the need is there. And the need is there not just for the counties, but for the CIB. I mean, your lifeblood is mineral lease money. And frankly, you have been taking somewhere between a 12 and 20% hit on the value of the crude oil coming from the Uinta Basin, which is a substantial part of the mineral lease account for the state of Utah. And the reason for that discount is that it's stranded. There's nowhere else to go with it. And during the high price period in 2013, 2014, there were a lot of barrels, sometimes maybe up to 30,000 barrels a day at times, that went by rail to other markets and got the full WTI or West Texas Intermediate NYMEX price. This morning, NYMEX is over $50 for the first time in a long time, first time since last spring sometime. There are changes afoot, probably, as you've all read in the news, that Saudi Arabia has decided that they're not going to continue to produce at excessive amounts, and they're going to be the swing player again. Not all the members of OPEC have agreed to that, so it's not going to happen instantly that we'll see prices come up where we need them. We probably need prices between $55 and $60 for this pipeline to make sense. That's the purpose of the economic study, because there are several factors that we need to understand better than we do. One is, what would the price be if we had the alternative market capability? The majority of the oil probably still goes to Salt Lake, to the refineries here, but perhaps at a much higher price, perhaps without the differential or with a much smaller differential. This morning, the differential is 12%. In 2014, when we were making 93,000 barrels a day, it was 18% average for the year. And that's on top of the fact that this waxy crude oil has a high yield. So when you refine a barrel of Uinta Basin waxy crude oil, you actually get a barrel and a quarter in products. So you're giving them more product, and you're taking a huge hit on the price. And this pipeline has to be built. And the counties take a double whammy, because they participate in mineral lease revenues, and they also get ad valorem property tax on this oil. And so the producing counties are really, their incentive for doing this is totally selfish and totally sensible. And that's why it has to happen. And my personal, I lived in Roosevelt for 20 years and still operate wells out there, but I've operated there since 1983. And this has to happen. I mean, this downturn that we're in right now is the fourth that I've seen in my time operating in that area. It's the second really bad one. The worst one was in 1986. And what happens when these economic dislocations take place in the oil and gas business is that properties change hands. And coming out of this, we will have new operators. And the good news for the counties and for the CIB is that the companies who buy these properties going forward will incur some debt. And so they'll have some pressure to service their debt, and they'll be drilling wells to increase their production when the price comes back up. But at the same time, we need to be concerned a little bit that historically the size of the companies and the capability of the companies that have taken the place of the earlier operators has come down every time. I mean, when I first started working at Altamont Bluebell Field, you had Shell, you had Chevron, you had Texaco, you had Exxon. I mean, you had the multinational leadership oil companies of the world operating in the Uinta Basin. And those people left, most of them, in the mid-1980s, and they've been replaced by people like, they were replaced by people like Pennzoil, for example, which then was subsequently replaced by Devon. Still great companies, but not Chevron, you know, in terms of capability. And so the state and the counties need to worry about, how attractive our oil production is to the people that have budgets to spend anywhere in the country. And We have not succeeded in Utah in developing an unconventional shale play for oil, like the Bakken Shale in North Dakota or the Niobrara Shale in Colorado. And that could still happen, but we do have really good conventional resources, and we need to not penalize those by having a really ugly transportation system. So the pipeline has to be built, and it will be built. It's a question of when, and that's a question of oil price. And then to your question about private investment, in times like these, the companies that could participate in this are hurting, and they're not looking for science projects to go put money into. And we've been very fortunate. One of the first things that Duchesne County and Carbon County did was bring in a number of potential pipeline partners, private current operators and constructors of pipelines, and we interviewed seven different companies, and we chose a company called Azure Midstream to be the private partner on this, and they will be paying the majority of the cost. They have paid the majority of the costs so far, and they're primarily a natural gas pipeline company, but they had acquired the one of the transloading facilities down in Helper and had been purchasing oil in the Uinta Basin, shipping it over Indian Canyon, Highway 191, one of the uglier truck rides in the state of Utah, to Helper and transloading it to rail and then shipping it to some of it to California, some of it to Oklahoma, and some of it to refineries in Louisiana, where they were getting a much better price. They were getting a high enough price so that there was about a $10 barrel arbitrage value for doing that transaction as opposed to shipping the oil by truck to Salt Lake, even after you paid the rail cost. So we've helped them because this project is on federal land, and honestly, the regulatory burden on projects on federal land has gotten to the point where private industry has a hard time choking it down. And there's a state down south that has a huge shale play going on called Texas, and they don't have any federal land except in Air Force bases. And we believe, the counties believe, that by keeping the ball rolling during this downtime, there is a opportunity to get a really efficient start on this project. Virtually everybody that needs to be involved in working on this project is suffering right now under the current economic situation in the oil and gas industry, and so things are relatively less expensive than they might otherwise be. I'll also tell you that the studies that I'm sure you're familiar with that handled Uinta Basin transportation issues and the railroad study were performed by HDR Engineering, and our intent is to use HDR Engineering for this economic study because they've already generated a huge amount of the data that's needed to do this, and it's fresh enough that it won't need to be redone. So this study will be a pretty good deal because we're not going to have to start from scratch. Anything else?
I think that answered part of the answer to that question, Mr. Galecki, was mentioned, but a big part of it is most of this oil is produced on federal lands, and it is just such a burden, there's such a regulatory burden from the federal government that it just discourages private companies from coming out here. It's hard for them to compete with someone who is producing on private lands, and so it's just really important that there be some help, some public help, with the idea in mind that the public will get a lot of the benefit. A 20% increase to the CIB on every barrel that goes out is going to be huge. So that's really a big part of the answer to that question.
Commissioner Mattson?
To fall back on some of my previous timber experience, tell me about spotted owls. I like to introduce myself as a spotted owl refugee. How big an impact is this? In other words, are these spotted owl territories occupied, or are they phantom?
Nothing has been identified. So phantom is a good term, potentially. So.
Well, the sage grouse.
There is some sage grouse habitat up there. So,
so the study itself will help, if you will, smoke that out.
Well, the plan of development of the BLM will do that, too.
Well, sorry.
You can tell where my bias is, Lee.
Yeah. I'm probably a little off on some of the facts on this, but as I recall, to the six-county infrastructure, we funded about $5 million previously. Is any of that money, you know, how has that money been spent, and has that been going into this project?
No, none of that money would go into this project. That money, most of the money that has been spent out of that fund so far was in the study that we did, that the coalition did, and we reported to you in a previous meeting where we went and looked at potential projects and corridors that we think are important that we be able to secure. This was one of those that came out of that study. This project was one of the ones that came really to the top of the list as a result of that study that we did on that project. The importance of being able to do this project now, as has been said, has really a lot to do with market, but it also has a lot to do with not losing those corridors that that are just so important to these kinds of projects. And as we look at the number and the kinds of projects that are available out there that the coalition is interested in, could be a part of over a course of many years, that's one of the most important things that study did, is to make sure that the corridors that are out there, we do not lose as a result of some other use of lands and some other uses from private potentially, but we want to make sure that we take a look at what's available out there. So that's where most of that money has been spent.
Mr. Hardy?
And this is probably more of a relevant question when a project application comes in, but what's the projected ownership structure of the pipeline usage rates? Who's going to pay for that? How is that proposed to be structured?
This is not determined yet, but just as an example of what the discussions have been, and with no commitment that that's how things are going to end up, but we've been talking in terms of 75% for the Azure industry partner and 25% for the counties as equity and ownership in the project.
And then would Azure have, like, we talk about throughput capacity when we went through the whole port project. Do they have preferred capacity there, or do they get to ship their stuff down there, and then they charge user rates to
Azure's
other companies?
Not a producer. They're okay. A transportation company. They're a pipe. The company's called Azure Midstream, and it's a pipeline and processing company. And so they would be entering into contracts with the producers for the oil, and that's part of the reason that that we selected them, is that they have experience in doing that. Some of the other pipeline companies that we talked to had no clue. They were gas companies that had no clue about how to get the oil from the oil well to the pipeline, which is a big deal. So.
And then the rates would be paid proportionately to the ownership structures?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Zanotti.
Senator, what is the timeline for this project from the start to finish, and what is the return on your money when you finish? Is a projection on that?
For this project, the timeline is going to be early spring for this phase.
Okay.
This $600,000 that we're applying for now, we believe that we can do the scope that Mr. Barton talked about earlier. It will take us through the winter and into the spring and answer a lot of the questions that are important to all of us. What is the economic viability? Is this something that we should continue to pursue? Are there some environmental roadblocks or species issues that are going to be roadblocks? This will answer a lot of those questions. And then we anticipate another phase that we would be starting the process on in early spring, and that could go potentially another 6 months to a year. I guess from an optimistic standpoint, we think in 2 years we may be able to be through this entire process. And, Brian, you might could address that more than I can.
Yeah, big picture, we're looking at anywhere from probably 3 to 5 years before oil is flowing.
If everything goes according to schedule, of course.
Yes.
And the reason for the difference between 3 years and 5 years is simply economic. Neither the private partner will not enter into this the big part of this investment unless it makes economic sense. And that is helpful to the counties because it also allows them to rely on their fiscal discipline in making an investment decision as well. But the real issue, and one of the things that Brian and his people have been trying to do, is to focus on the aspects of this project that take time, that would delay us if they weren't done now, but that have a long shelf life. So things that won't expire in 2 years, so we do it now, and it'll still be good 3 or 4 years down the road if we need it. There are a couple things, including the spotted owl study, that do have a short shelf life, 2 years. But if we didn't do the spotted owl study last June, which it has to be done in June, if we didn't do it in June last year, then we would be a year behind on that already. And so, fortunately, it's not a tremendously expensive thing, but it's one of those things that you just can't avoid. So
if you don't make the projection of $55 per barrel, you're not going to continue with this project, then you're going to put it on the shelf until you get that $55 barrel threshold?
I think that the economic study that would be funded by this by the funding we're asking for now will tell us the answer, tell us and you in a lot more detail and with a lot more certainty what that level is. That's but, yes, there's a dollar. I mean, the thing has to be economic or you won't be able to make it function. I've watched prices in this business for 40 years, and they always come back. Okay. And then they always go down again. So you need to get this built while they're supportive.
And the last question I have, is the UDOT part of this partnership or study, or is they're involved? Because I have not heard this in my meetings.
They're not part of this study. As has been said, we are going to be using a lot of what the original study that UDOT did with HDR as potentially a partner in this project. So some of the work that they've already done, we'd be able to use. So.
We will interface with UDOT in this study for sure. The people that at UDOT that were involved in the transportation study are still there. They're still in pretty much the same jobs, and I've spoken with a couple of them, and they will definitely be resources for this study.
Well, I hope you use, because there's a vast amount of information there in the UDOT that I've seen it personally. Yeah. Thank you.
Mr. Farrell?
This question might be a little off base, but being involved with Lake Powell Pipeline, what kind of environmental and public opposition do you expect on this?
At this point, we don't know yet. It's hard to say. Seems like there always is some, but this project has such a tremendous environmental positive impact of getting those trucks off the road and being able to get this to rail, which is a much cleaner way to be able to move product. And as well as economic, the cleanliness, the lack of pollution, the amount of pollution that would be saved, I would think would really help this project not to have nearly as much opposition.
We will cut air emissions for a barrel of oil going to Salt Lake via truck from the wellhead to the pipeline terminal in Mighton, then going 70 miles down the pipeline to Carbon County and being put on rail and shipped back by train to a refinery in Salt Lake City. Right now, it appears that the emissions would be 80% less than trucking that oil from the wellhead to the refinery. That's a huge number, and especially when you consider that both ends of the pipe of this trip that the trucks make, the Uinta Basin end and the Salt Lake Valley end, have air emissions issues, and frankly, every place along the route has pretty similar issues as well. I mean, Heber Valley's starting to worry about those things too. And, you know, it'll be the normal environmental opposition to this. It'll be people who want to heat their houses with natural gas and drive their cars with oil, but they don't want it to get to market somehow.
And the other thing that's important about this project, we're going to be able to stay in almost entirely in already disturbed areas.
Yeah.
So it won't be any virgin ground, which usually ends up raising some questions, or very little. Some of it will be on private. So I think that there will probably be a lot less opposition than the Lake Powell pipeline project, as you mentioned, which has a lot of other questions, economic questions and lots of other questions.
Does any of it go over tribal lands?
No.
Commissioner Mattson?
In the spirit of self-interest for CIB, I would move approval of this funding proposal.
We have a motion.
Let's second that.
We have a second by Commissioner Ogden. We had a question by Commissioner McKee.
Well, it was just one concern. I'd hate to bring something up after a motion second, but I do have one concern.
Please.
And that is, with that much saving in pollution, it's pretty cold out in the winter as it is now. And having less pollution means we'll have less global warming, so it's going to be even colder out in the basin.
You realize this is on the record.
And so I just bring that up as one problem, but I still support
it. I have a solution for you, Commissioner. Move to St. George.
I help you on that. Treasurer Dampson?
I have an actual question. And I apologize. I don't have the benefit of some of the prior conversations on this, and I have a couple of questions. One of them may be a question more for staff than for the team. So my understanding is we have a pretty well-established precedent for cash match for these types of requests, and we don't have a cash match here. We have, in essence, an in-kind. So the first question is, what documentation do we have that supports those matching expenditures? I suspect we have that information in hand. And then the other question is, if we're going to adhere with discipline to precedent, particularly on a request of this large size, and we said we need a cash match, are those resources available? Are the counties and the private partner in a position to bring the resources to match the grant that are typically provided in such a request?
This particular application has match that has happened previously that has been accounted for, much like the cash match that was awarded through Six County Infrastructure Coalition done by the UDOT. So that's the accommodation for this particular request. So it has been accounted for.
Further questions on the motion? Call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you, staff, for your work on this.
As a reminder, you leave, make sure that you signed in. You're not allowed to leave unless you signed in that you came. Next up is Oray Park Water Improvement District, which is coming from our pending list.
To start with, I'm back. We we was here in September, and had been asked at that time if we could remove a building that we had scheduled. We had looked at building our own facility, and we had been asked by the board to try to cut some of the costs, and we have. We've removed the building. Our initial request was $1,926,000, and we have cut that by $536,000. And we're here now with a request for $1,390,000. We feel that the things that we've trimmed out of the original budget, I think, are things that once we get this next phase completed, if there's a phase three down the road someplace, we can look at them then. But what we've done now is we've trimmed it about as much as we think we can to still get phase two of our project completed.
Commissioner McKee?
Chairman, with that, they've done, I think, what we asked them to do, and I would move to approve.
We have a motion. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Commissioner Mattson with the second. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Before you leave, I need each of you to introduce yourselves for the audio record.
Max Jensen with Ouray Park Water Improvement District.
And Keith Despain with CRS Engineers.
Gentlemen, excellent presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Our next item of business is a board discussion to introduce the topic briefly. There have been questions over the past several years about the percentage and the volume of money that the board is asked to expend for engineering and engineering-related costs. I think part of the issue is that we are doing a significant amount of granting of money, wherefore the applicant doesn't necessarily have any skin in the game, and so it makes it very easy for them to be less concerned about the percentage of the project or the total amount of money that is going into engineering because it's not their money. However, it is money that we as community impact board members have a fiduciary responsibility for. Therefore, we're concerned about the percentage and the volume of engineering funds that are sometimes being requested. Obviously, quality engineering is money well spent, and there are a lot of additional things that oftentimes fall into the engineering expense. You know, we talk a lot about federal permitting, applications, requirements, those types of things. You know, there's construction management, it goes on and on. And so all of those tend to get charged by the engineering company to the engineering company. And again, we're paying the bill for that. And so trying to figure out how, as board members, we can get a better grasp on are those expenses really necessary for a quality project, or are we being taken advantage of? We asked staff to do some research, and I know Candace has done some of that. So we'll give her some time to talk about what research they've done, and then we'll have a discussion about that. Ms. Powers?
After the board meeting, last time, and engineering was a topic of discussion, it was suggested by Kimberly Schmeling that DFCM had a template and a chart that they utilized for their projects. It did expose, and we went to that, and I was trying to cull it down, but after speaking to a engineer, he suggested that he would review these items, and we also provided an MOA to him of potential services that he could provide for oversight, much like we have DEQ do and UDOT at this time. He did look over the MOA. We as a staff did look at DFCM's. There's one thing that DFCM has a little bit different ability than we do, and that's that they do have a staff that can go out and do the post oversight to see that that engineering was indeed correct. Those engineer costs for DFCM were forwarded to outside engineering to look at. They're still looking at them, so I do not have a document per se to give you. The DFCM website I can give you. You can look at it in the raw as according to what they do. But what it really indicated is there are the three groups, and we're cutting them into those three groups now, pre-engineering, the design portion of the engineering, and then project oversight engineering. They will, as you will see from that website, they indicated that their percentages are probably less than what we've been allocating for it. But keep in mind that they also have in-house engineers that can fill in the capacity that perhaps we cannot. There's also the possibility of an MOA with an engineer. It has been suggested what we pay UDOT is because they already have the person on site to review some of these road applications, it's $90 an hour. The proposal came back that they want $137 an hour. Does the board want to pursue an MOA at that price for this, and will you get benefit? So really, it was my intent to have something to hand out to you that would be concrete, but with that cost, I didn't want to proceed.
So to clarify, Candace, DCFM is the State Department of Community and Facilities Management?
Department of Facilities.
DFCM.
Yeah.
And Construction Management.
Construction Management. Yeah, that's our community in there? Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. I'm partial.
It is.
Commissioner McKee?
Just a couple thoughts on that. Obviously, when we get into engineering and professional services, and I'm kind of seeing this from two sides here for a minute, we want to save all the money that we can. But typically, it's suggested that a lot of times you don't want to take the cheapest bid that comes to you. And I know this from talking with some of the inside people that through change orders and other ways, sometimes that cheapest bid, and they actually have people on staff sometimes that actually will look and see what items might have been missed that they can do in change orders and a way of being able to crank that up higher on the other end. And so I don't think anybody here is here to try and hold back our engineering groups. We just want to make sure that we're getting a good, fair product and a fair price. And I think, as you've mentioned, I think being able to evaluate and look at when we look at DFCM, DCFM, whichever that is.
DFCM.
I've got it all messed up now.
I think that gives us a really good feel of what happens in government. I also believe, I don't know this, but I believe if we were to compare to private enterprise, it may be a little bit less. But in any case, I think it would be nice if we kind of could find some standards on different things. When we do roads, what is a typical road project if we were to look at average? What is a typical engineering? What about water projects? What about buildings? Because these all may fall into a different deal. And it doesn't mean that any project is going to be average, but I think at least if we could get some of those breakdowns of what's kind of expected in some of those different kind of projects, at least it might help us to say, why is this and more? If it's less, we can just be really quiet. And
with the reference to DEQs, we do have in-house engineers that are very, very valuable. That's kind of the shortfall for construction of buildings and roads and such, because DEQ has done a marvelous job in oversight and seeing that the engineering is within line. And then they have to approve the project and the planning afterwards, which is a great benefit to CIB, but I don't know where you get that for other projects.
Do you have a recommendation? Does staff have a recommendation at this time? Or do we need more time to study the issue? What do you recommend? Sorry to put you on the spot.
I have two thoughts. One, the board has been utilizing some expertise from UDOT for roads. I don't know. I haven't received much feedback from the board that has been of value in the format that has been provided, but it has been expensive.
Yes.
We have an MOA with UDOT going through fiscal year 2017. So we'll continue to get those reviews from them at a cost. My recommendation is perhaps some review by DEQ how they go through it. But that's still apples and watermelons because they have the in-house engineers that oversee the engineering for water and sewer, and those are finite projects. We have nebulous projects that come in, and they're all different types, and engineering is critical to many of them, and good engineering is even more critical I'm seeing Kimberly back there. She'd like to. That she's the one that provided the DFCM website, and we're having it looked at right now. But she also has engineer insight.
Well, not necessarily.
Architectural.
Architectural. I think what might be beneficial to the board is that we look at the DFCM grid, and it is broken out in terms of complexity compared to economies of scale, things like that. Look at that and then maybe go back a few years and look at some of the percentages of engineering costs that that the board has approved in the projects that they've approved, and just offer that up at one of the future meetings so that the board can then just have the information and make comparisons themselves. Does that seem reasonable?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know we've done some preliminary work on that. This is a very serious matter, obviously. We're spending a lot of money. Probably millions of dollars have been spent on engineering easily over the past several years. And so this is a very critical conversation. You know, one thing that I've discovered in researching this for the past several months and more intensively this past month is that it is very complicated, and it's difficult for a funding group like ours to really get a handle on this. And for me, I'm trying to figure out, well, what's the real root of the problem? And what I find is that, again, when we're granting so much money, oftentimes 100% grant, there's no incentive for the applicant to concern themselves with how much they're paying for engineering. The system by design, the onus is on the applicant. It's the municipality or the county or the special service district that is supposed to be procuring the engineering that's watching that. They're the ones who are getting the value for it, yet they're not paying for it. Candace pulled up an interesting statistic for me last week. She's been tracking the fund since 1998, and never in the history of the fund have we spent as large a percentage on grant versus loan as we did last year. Last year it was 58% grant, and then the balance was loan. That's the highest percentage of grant ever that she's been recording. So far this year, the number she had to date, it was up to 62%. We're moving in the wrong direction in the amount of money that we're loaning versus granting, or granting versus loaning, if you prefer. And that's, again, where the accountability comes into play. If the applicant has some skin in the game, if they're the ones paying for the engineering, then they're going to be paying attention to how they procure that. They're going to be attention to the value they get for that money. Again, it's very difficult for us to do this at our level, and the system is not designed for that. So, that's a different way to maybe skin the cat, but as I look at the data, that's kind of the message that I'm getting is that we just probably need to do a better job of making the applicant have some investment in their own project. Having said that, Treasurer Damshin, you had a comment?
Well, I just wanted to respond to a comment that Commissioner McKee made about procurement. Clearly, I agree, particularly in my realm, for financial services, you don't take the low bidder for securities underwriting, for municipal advisory services, for investments. You care about performance. You care about professional expertise. Sometimes paying a little bit more leads to a far superior economic result. That said, well-constructed procurements can address that. You know, you can strike the appropriate balance between cost factors and technical factors in evaluating a professional service provider. So my question is, have we ever, to any degree, pressed applicants for proof of procurement? The process could get pretty cumbersome if we're the procurement police, but I think that the starting point, as the chair has, I think, implied pretty clearly, is we need to reel back pretty hard on outright grant making and make sure that applicants have more skin in the game. That will probably prompt them to be a little bit more disciplined, or to maintain discipline, if you will, in procurement processes. But I'm just curious, do we ever query or ask about procurement processes that were utilize in selection of these professionals, or do we just let them come to the table and we have no idea whatsoever if they've used a disciplined procurement process in selection?
That's a good thing about a loan, because when they have some loan funding, before the loan closes, they have to have a bid, and they have to do get as many bids as they can. Sometimes you don't get enough people bidding, but three is usually the minimum. And so when you have a loan going out, they have to have those bids provided prior to making that loan closing. With a grant, they just have to stay within budget for and have all requests for reimbursement be within the scope of work. So the oversight is, if you were to audit them, which you could do, I'm sure they have procurement guidelines they're supposed to follow in a city or a county or a town. And so really, once again, the onus is on them to make sure that the procurement process was correct. When it's a loan, there's a lot of due diligence that's done by Bill Prater and such.
To answer your question, in my experience with this board over the past 10 years, there have been times when that has been pressed. Things ebb and flow and go in cycles, and we've had cycles where we pressed that pretty hard and applicants came prepared to answer that question. Currently, we have not been pressing that. We've been, again, approaching this from maybe making it our responsibility rather than pushing it back on them. So,
I just wanted to thank the chair and staff for the answer to the question. I think that when you look at the basic so-called skin in the game issue, that argues for loans, but realizing that there is a framework for procurement accountability that comes with loans and not with grants, that makes it that much more clear to me. We need to be extremely conservative and judicious in the application of grants for these types of requests. I think that there's a strong delineation, and I have a lot more comfort with a mechanism that has that verification of bids to ensure that there are competitive procurement processes involved. I think for us as fiduciaries, we're cutting loose on a lot of money here, and I think we need to be very mindful of those differences between what happens with the grant versus the loan.
If I can add one more thought on the idea of loaning, is that I was looking at receipts yesterday and summing up the fiscal year 16, and of course, with we're all well aware of the drop-off in pricing and production and, in fact, receipts. We've faced a 65% reduction in receipts over the last couple of years. And our loan revenue, our repayment revenue, actually exceeds our new receipts significantly by about 40%. So that's the result of years and years and years of lending. That has sustained the board's activity over the past 2 years is the repayment income.
So if you start looking at
diminishing returns, that's going to be significant over the next few years.
Numerous benefits to doing a loan grant mix, and historically we've done that quite heavily. If you look at what we did today, again, the majority were pure grants with no loan. And so all of those safeguards, all of those good practices that come, even if there's a small loan portion, and again, we've talked, anything less than $100,000 isn't really worth the bond effort in most projects, but $100,000 when the levels we're talking really is small potatoes, but forcing the applicants into some level of loan, while complicating the projects on one hand and understanding that many applicants find that very difficult, if not all applicants, there's tremendous value, and it goes far beyond just what we're talking about here today. And so I think as a board, we do need to do a better job of bringing some of that to the table. Mr. Galecki and then Mr. Zanotti.
I have a couple questions. So did I hear you correctly just now? So even if it is 90% grant and 10% loan, it goes through that procurement process?
Well, it goes through the bonding process that Bill can speak to.
I need to clarify what the answer was saying. When we close on a project, the attorney for the borrower has to be Mr. Chairman, that they...
Oh, Bill, can you speak into the microphone, of course? Thank you. Thank you, Chef.
All right.
I wanted to clarify what Candace said. When we close a loan on a project, one of the requirements is that the attorney for the borrower give us an opinion that the borrower complied with all applicable bidding laws with respect to the project. But Candace, I don't think we ever know whether they bid out the engineering side. That's not covered by that opinion. I don't think we have any way of verifying how the engineer was selected.
And part of that's going to vary by county if we go to county procurement.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And what those procedures are, so it would be very difficult to know.
And I suspect a lot of projects are brought to the city by an engineering firm. That's been my observation.
That would be a concern.
Yeah. It's interesting as we look at the next couple of meetings, and we have over $7 million in grant and about $3 million in loans. And you know, so not even half of those have a loan grant mix in them.
I had a couple of other questions. Is that, so like we said, if I have the acronym correct, DFCM costs about $90 an hour. Was that the one? But UDOT, how much do we...
DFCM doesn't charge us anything. We don't go through DFCM. I don't know what they charge. It's okay. UDOT that charges $90.
UDOT.
Yeah, but the engineer that would look over engineering to do that would charge $137.
And along those lines, now, would that be on, are we thinking on every project, or would it be more like an auditing thing that it's like, you know, you look at, would it be, when I say an audit, just it would be, you know, spotty, or, you know, just, would it be every project or some other determination of looking at that?
My suggestion is that you don't need it over water and sewer. They're already, they have to pre-approve the plan before a project goes forward. They have to approve the project, that it's compliant. And so that's kind of already in place. Am I stating that correctly?
And I guess that's, I mean, yeah, we have that for UDOT. We have it for water
projects.
But for UDOT,
UDOT brokers out their engineering. Yes, and so we just use their brokered reviewers. But they look at UDOT's projects much the same way as they're looking at ours.
Nathan, you came to the table?
That's because I wanted to at least talk into the mic once during my last meeting. So I just wanted to clarify.
Would you like to come sit up at the
table? No, okay. No. Didn't even put a tie on this time, just in case you threatened. So on the water side, Beth can clarify if there's anything different on the sewer side, but on the water side, we use the Farmer's Home Table from USDA, and we just compare the engineering cost to that standardized table as a percentage, and then if they are above that, then we start asking questions. Most of the time, they come in below that.
Is that similar to an RS means type chart, or?
I don't know that chart.
Okay.
So I saw some nods about the Farmer's Home Table. It's just a chart that was developed as a, based upon the cost of the project, there's a certain percentage that is acceptable for engineering costs. An engineer shouldn't just be using that to say, okay, that's what we're going to charge. They should be, you know, costing it out on an hourly basis, and then just make sure that it's below that, but that's usually not what happens. I think a lot of times they just use that percentage that's acceptable. So I don't know if you can come up with a way of verifying that. The procurement process for engineers is one way of doing that. But I just wanted to mention that.
Thank you, Nathan.
Well,
just a second, Greg. No, can sorry. We go to Mr. Farrell?
Just to weigh in, this body, to address some of these concerns that are being raised, could set policies in the application process that could address some of this, and that would come back to this body. So,
thank you. Good point. Back to Greg and then Mr. Zanotti.
So if I caught Wade correctly, is that Kim would come up with some, you know, policy procedures?
Yes.
I just want to make sure.
Mr. Zanotti? Well, my question was, do we have a provision already in place to say, okay, engineering portion of the expense should not be included in the application for the grant, or no? So that's not.
But we have a right to do so as a board to implement that. Okay. My second, I would like to respond to Commissioner McKee's question about the historical data for engineering process. As a professional engineer, I know that I can tell you not two projects will be the same, even if you compare it.
Right.
It will depend on the geography, geology, and sites, and conditions, and the season, the communities. The deal with, of course, getting the contractors be readily available to bid on that, and the engineers. St. George may have 25 people to compete. Well, in the Duchesne, maybe just the two people that I have to rely on to compete. So it is not. You can rely on historical data, but it will not be accurate to say it's exactly $25 should be in this process. Thank you.
Good points. Mr. Hardy?
I think we have two issues we're really talking about. One, certainly the engineering, which we don't have a good handle on yet, but we're starting the discussion, and I think we can get to some better spots on that. The second is of concern is the whole grant loan mix. And I would propose, and we were kind of thinking about doing this in the next policy retreat in June, but it may be important for this board to really set some standards on how much they want to grant versus loan as a target that we always measure ourselves against so that we don't get in these positions where we see the applications and, you know, we end up at 64% when I think traditionally we've been around 30% is, you know, more a third of the funds have been grant. So we're double what we would normally done as a board, and that's a concern. So if we had some more targets that we measured ourselves against as goals and aspirations of the board as far as the grant loan mix, I think that would be helpful, and that's something we could do at any time.
There's a third element, I think, that bears mentioning, too, and that is, in addition to the engineering, the subject of architectural consulting, I think they could be treated both the same as far as process steps that we take. We build a lot of buildings.
Right, right, absolutely. Well, I feel this has been a healthy discussion. I was telling John the other day that it's the nature of every board to fill the usual time allotment, and normally this board goes till noon, so I know that we're all disposed to think, oh, we need to talk for an hour and a half, but we don't. So I think there's been some good discussion, some good thoughts shared. Staff will direct you to continue doing some research on engineering. I think we've got some good ideas to follow up on. As a board, I think we are all looking inwardly at our fiduciary responsibilities and how we can...
Did you add architectural
yes.
to that list as well?
Absolutely.
I didn't hear it, so I'm just making sure.
My oversight, for sure. So, Commissioner Adams.
I'm not remembering correctly, but it seems to me like we've always had kind of a target of a 50-50 loan grant mix, but is that not necessarily? I know there are special circumstances when these small communities come in, very rural. They don't have much tax base. If they have any tax base, we've had communities come in that have absolutely no. Commercial tax base at all in their community, and we've bent the rules when those kind of communities come in, and maybe we've got used to bending the rules. But I thought at one point we kind of had a target that you need to have skin in the game, and if you have skin in the game, we'd consider possibly a 50-50 grant loan mix. Is it just my memory, or?
No, I mean that's not inaccurate. We're trying to balance numerous items. One thing is we have two different funds. We have a mineral lease fund, which we have total latitude with, and we have a bonus fund where we have to lend that out at an interest rate. And so oftentimes I think we find ourselves saying, well, mineral lease, that's the grant fund, the bonus is the loan fund. And that's not true historically. We've done 30% grant, 30% mineral lease loans, traditionally at 0%, and then we do our bonus loans traditionally at 2.5%, although that's varied over the years. So it's kind of been a, 35, 30, 30, 40 type thing or whatever.
And so that's where we try to be, which is close to 50-50. And so, you know, again, some trimesters, that's where we would be. So, again, you're not wrong, but there's just so many things at play in trying to balance communities that really don't have any other recourse with those that do, and, you know, just trying to be good, nice people. I mean, there's just so much at play. Commissioner McKee?
Yeah. Well, I thought Mike was the policeman.
Well, that's
determined.
You hit the heart of the problem, and we didn't want to go there.
If we're over the target, whose fault is it?
Thanks a lot. Just one other thought as we contemplate all this too, as well, though, that I'd like to bring in. I mean, I think of Garfield County. We had, you know, that was one of the projects that came in today, and they have just simply had a position. We're not taking on debt, and we'll save money however long it takes to get to that amount, and rather than doing it the other way and taking a loan, we'll you know, and the board has given some, you kind of have to appreciate, you know, their thought process and what they're trying to do. And so I hate to be too rigid on everything. The other thing is that I would just note as well, and I think particularly in our rural counties, but I know we certainly feel it in the basin, but our economy is down. And I think when it is down, it is helpful to be able to help out a little bit more compared to when we're thriving. I think one of our districts, for example, has $19 million in debt. I know they're feeling like, and that was, a lot of this was building that Seabridge Road that benefits the entire state. And I know they feel like they can't, you know, the debt load is, you know, they feel like they're pretty well there. And yet somewhere down the road, maybe there's a project that really is an important project. So I just think we need to have enough flexibility that we can deal with each situation as we move along.
Agreed. Again, there are so many issues at play with every single applicant and every single meeting. So we do the best we can. But, you know, statistics, I think, are helpful for trying to keep us on track. And this engineering architectural issue is certainly one that I think is a concern. So, Greg?
Just one quick comment on that. You know, how we're trying to work on the balance of loans and grants. I think the tool that the Rural Planning Group has started to provide to us will help us as far as developing, you know, a little bit of a stronger tool to say whether they can truly afford something or not. I mean, so often it's like, can you take on more loan? You know, right on the spot, it's like, no, you know, we can't, but that's what we feel we can. So I think that'll be a valuable tool for us.
Yeah, excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up.
Research before the meeting?
Yeah.
Or after their tool? Okay, go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Candace. Any other issues for a future meeting or things to be discussed? Seeing none, motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Thank you, Mr. Zanotti. Non-arguative, so meeting is adjourned. Again, make sure that you have your things in order for Moab. That will be our next meeting. I know it's a long drive.